is a dress bag. Taylor? Anna's surprised. Christian, I state, feeling a little aggrieved that she would doubt me. She laughs in that indulgent way she has sometimes, unzips the bag and takes out the dress. She draws a sharp breath as she holds it up.
It's lovely, she says. Thank you. I hope it fits.
It will, I hope. And here. From the depths of the closet, I retrieve the box. Shoes to match. High-heeled fuck-me pumps, my favorite.
You think of everything. Thank you.
She kisses me, a sweet, chaste peck, and I flash her a quick grin, pleased. I do. I hand her a second, smaller Nordstrom bag that weighs nothing and seems to be all tissue. Anna ferrets around inside and discovers the black lace lingerie to complement the dress. Tilting her chin up, I plant a soft kiss on her lips. I look forward to taking this off you later.
So do I,
she whispers, and her words inspire my cock. Not now, Gray. Shall I run you a bath? I ask.
Please.
While Anna is soaking in the tub, I check with the hotel that all of Andrea's arrangements are in place. It seems she's thought of everything, right down to the decorations.
Give the woman a raise, Gray.
I have to wait for Anna, so I open my laptop, pull up Gio D'Amaro's P&L, and spend several minutes running through it. Their sales could be better, but their cash deposits are healthy, given it's a fairly new company. However, with their considerable expenses, their profit margins aren't as high as I would expect. We can get them there. I make a few notes of what we could do, until the sound of a hairdryer coming to life next door pulls me from the spreadsheet. I've lost track of time. Ambling into the bedroom, I find a squeaky clean Anna sitting on the edge of the bed, wrapped in a towel, drying her hair. Here, let me. I offer, and point to the chair by the dressing table.
Dry my hair?
Her disbelief is obvious. Anna, this is not my first rodeo. But I'm not sure she'd like to hear that I used to do this for my submissives as a reward for good behavior. Come, I coax her. She seats herself in the chair, throwing me a quizzical look in the mirror. But as I brush her hair, she surrenders herself to my ministrations. It's an absorbing task, and I soon find myself lost in it, detangling strands of her hair, then drying them. It takes me back, much further back than I want to go, to a small, shabby room in a slum in Detroit. I halt those thoughts immediately.
You're no stranger to this.
Anna interrupts my reverie, and I smile at her in the mirror, but say nothing. You don't want to know, Anna. When I'm finished, her hair is soft and lush, capturing the light from a lamp on the dressing table. Beautiful.
Thank you,
she says, shaking her head and letting her hair tumble down her back. I drop a kiss on her naked shoulder and tell her that I'll have a quick shower. She smiles, though I see her sadness, and it makes me wonder if I've made the right decision to host this party. Hell. These thoughts weigh heavily on me as I step under the cascade of hot water. So much so that I offer a silent prayer to God. Make Ray better. Please, Lord. When I come out of the bathroom, Anna's waiting for me. She looks stunning. The dress fits perfectly, accentuating her beautiful body, and the bracelet sparkles on her wrist. She does a quick twirl, then stops so I can zip her up. You look gorgeous, as you should on your birthday, I whisper. She turns and places her hands on my naked chest.
So do you.
She peeks up at me, through long lashes, in that way that heats my blood. Anna. I'd better get dressed before I change my mind about dinner and unzip that dress.
You chose well, Mr. Gray.
You wear it well, Mrs. Gray. Mia has texted to let me know everyone has gathered in the room. Squeezing Anna's hand as we step out of the elevator onto the mezzanine level, I hope she likes surprises. I steer us toward the private dining rooms, my stunning wife seemingly oblivious to the admiring glances she's attracting. At the end of the corridor, I pause for the briefest moment before I open the door. Then in we go, to a rousing chorus of surprise. Mom, Dad, Kate, Elliot, both Jose's, Mia, Ethan, Bob, and Carla all raise their glasses, cheering, as we stand together before our family and friends. Anna turns and gawks at me. I grin, squeezing her hand, delighted that this has all come together, and Carla steps forward, sweeping Anna into her arms.
Darling, you look beautiful. Happy birthday. Mom.
Anna sobs. It's a bittersweet sound, and I step away to give them some privacy and to greet the rest of our guests. I'm actually pleased to see everyone, even Jose. He and his father are looking well-rested and less battered than yesterday. Elliot and Ethan rave about Charlie Tango, Mia and Kate about the Heathman.
And I got to fly in your helicopter. Thank you so much.
Mia throws her arms around me. I ask her how her job's going.
So far, so good.
She grins.
Oh, my turn for Anna.
She darts off to pester my wife.
Thanks for all this, Christian,
Kate says.
I'm sure Anna appreciates it.
I hope so. When I return to her, Elliot has Anna in a tight embrace. Taking her hand, I ease her to my side. Enough fondling my wife. Go fondle your fiancé, I say without rancor. Elliot winks at Kate. A waiter presents Anna and me with flutes of rosé champagne, our usual. Grand Honnée, of course. I clear my throat. The general hum in the room dies down as everyone gives me their attention. This would be a perfect day if Ray were here with us, but he's not far away. He's doing well, and I know he'd like you to enjoy yourself, Anna. To all of you, thank you for coming to share my beautiful wife's birthday, the first of many to come. Happy birthday, my love. I raise my glass to my girl amid a chorus of happy birthdays, and tears shine in her eyes. Oh, baby. I kiss her temple, longing to take her hurt away. Good surprise? I ask, suddenly nervous.
Very good surprise. Thank you, you darling man.
She raises her lips to mine, and I give her a quick, chaste peck, suitable for family viewing. Anna is not her usual self during dinner. She's subdued, but I understand. She's worried about her father. She follows the conversations, laughs in the right places, and I think she's buoyed by the merriment of our family and friends. But deep down, my girl is aching. She's pale, she's chewing her lip, and occasionally she's distracted, probably lost in her dark thoughts. I see her pain, and I'm powerless to help. It's frustrating. She picks at her food, but I don't nag her. I'm just grateful she ate a hearty lunch. Elliot and Jose are in top form. I had no idea the photographer had such a sharp sense of humor. Kate, too, has noticed Anna's state. She's solicitous. And during a hushed conversation, I watch them laughing. Anna shows off her new bracelet, and Kate makes the right appreciative noises. My feelings toward Kavanaugh thaw a little more. Make my wife laugh. She needs the distraction right now. Finally, a magnificent chocolate cake with 22 candles ablaze is delivered by two waitstaff. Elliot starts a spirited rendition of Happy Birthday, and we all join in. Anna's smile is wistful. Make a wish, I whisper to her, and she screws her eyes shut like a child might, then blows out every candle in one breath. She looks up at me, anxiously, and I know she's thinking of Ray. He'll be fine, Anna. Just give him time. Bidding good night to all our guests, we wander up to our hotel room. I think the night has been a success. Anna seems more content, and I'm surprised, given the circumstances, how much I enjoyed everyone's company. I close the door to our suite and lean against it as Anna turns to face me. Alone at last, I mutter. She must be exhausted. She steps toward me and runs her fingers over my lapels.
Thank you for a wonderful birthday. You really are the most thoughtful, considerate, generous husband.
My pleasure.
Yes, your pleasure. Let's do something about that.
She whispers and raises her lips to mine. Sunday, September 11th, 2011. Anna is curled up on the sofa in our suite, reading a manuscript that she's had printed out at the hotel. She's calm and focused, that little V forming between her brows as she scribbles her blue-penciled hieroglyphics in the margins. Occasionally, she chews her plump lower lip, and I don't know if it's a judgment on what she's reading or if she's immersed in the narrative, but it has the usual effect on my body. I want to bite that lip. Smiling to myself, I remember my surprise wake-up call this morning. Anna is becoming more and more proactive when it comes to sex, but as the beneficiary of her passion, I'm not complaining. I think seeing her nearest and dearest at this difficult time has been therapeutic. Having said that, it's been an emotional morning. After a convivial breakfast with our family and friends, we said goodbye to everyone except Carla and Bob. My parents have driven back to Seattle. Stefan has flown Elliot, Mia, Kate, and Ethan back home in Charlie Tango. Ryan, who's still in Seattle, will pick them up at Boeing Field. After everyone left, Carla, Anna, and I visited Ray. Well, Carla and Anna did. I gave them some privacy and worked in the waiting room until it was time to take Carla and Bob to the airport. We delivered them into the safe hands of First Officer Bailey and her co-pilot, who were standing by with the Gulfstream. Anna said a tearful farewell to her mother, and now we're back in our suite, cooling our heels after a light lunch. I think Anna is reading to distract herself from thinking about Ray. I'd just like to go home, but I guess that depends on Ray's recovery. I hope he wakes shortly, and we can make plans to move him to Seattle and return to Escala. I don't mention this to Anna, though. I don't want to add to her worries. I've had my fill of reading, so to pass the time, I've started assembling a collage of photographs of my wife to use as a screensaver on my laptop and phone. I have so many photographs of her from our honeymoon, and in all of them, Anna is stunning. I'm delighted to have captured her in so many different moods, laughing, pensive, pouting, amused, relaxed, happy, and in some, she's scowling at me. Those are the photos that make me grin. I'm reminded of the shock at seeing her image, large and lovely, at Jose Rodriguez's exhibition, and our conversation afterward. I want you that relaxed with me. I glance over at her again. Here she is, relaxed, absorbed in her work. Mission accomplished, Gray. We'll hang the other photographs in our new house, and maybe I'll put one of them in the study at Escala. She looks up.
What?
I tap my index finger against my lips and shake my head. Nothing. How's the book?
It's a political thriller set in a dystopian surreal future.
Sounds riveting.
It is. It's a take on Dante's Inferno by a new writer who's based in Seattle, Boyce Fox.
Anna's eyes shine, animated with the thrill of a good book. I can't wait to read it. She smiles and returns to her manuscript. Smiling, I return to my collage. A little later, she gets up and wanders over to me, her expression hopeful.
Can we go back?
Of course. I close my laptop, pleased with my photo montage of Mrs. Anastasia Gray.
Will you drive?
She asks.
Sure.
Taylor is visiting his daughter, and I've given Sawyer the day off.
I want to grab a copy of the Oregonian on the way so I can read Dad the sports page.
Good idea. I'm sure they'll have one at reception. Let's go. I grab my jacket and my laptop, and we head out. Ray lies peacefully asleep in his hospital bed, and it takes a few seconds for Anna and me to realize that he's no longer on a ventilator. The repetitive, measured blast of air that had been his constant companion is no more. He's breathing on his own. Anna's face glows in relief. With infinite tenderness, she strokes his stubbled chin and wipes his spittle with a tissue. I look away. I'm intruding. This wordless expression of love from a daughter to her father is too intimate for me to witness. I know Ray would be mortified if he knew I was standing here watching him at his most vulnerable. I stalk off to find one of his doctors for an update. Nurse Kelly and her colleague Liz are at the nurse's station.
Dr. Sluter is in surgery.
Kelly picks up the phone.
She's due out any minute. Do you want me to page her?
No, that's fine. Thanks. I leave both nurses and head back to the all-too-familiar waiting room. Again, I'm here alone. Slumping into one of the chairs, I open my laptop and pull up the latest iteration of my Anna collage. I've decided I want to add a few photographs from our wedding. I'm completely absorbed in the task when Anna bursts into the room, dragging me from the screen. Her eyes are red-rimmed from fresh tears, but she's brimming with elation.
"He's awake!"
she exclaims. "Thank God, at last." Setting aside my laptop, I stand up to embrace her. "How is he?" She snuggles against my chest, her eyes closed as she wraps her arms around me.
"Talking, thirsty, bewildered. He doesn't remember the accident at all."
"That's understandable. Now that he's awake, I want to get him moved to Seattle. Then we can go home and my mom can keep an eye on him."
"I'm not sure he's well enough to be moved."
"I'll talk to Dr. Sluter, get her opinion."
"You miss home?"
Anna looks up at me. "Yes. Very much."
"Okay."
She smiles, and together we return to the ward where we find Ray is sitting up in bed. He looks a little shell-shocked and frankly embarrassed that I'm there. "Ray, it's good to see you back with us."
"Thanks, Christian," he grumbles. "Awful lot of trouble for you kids to be here."
"Dad, it's no trouble. We don't want to be anywhere else."
Anna tries to reassure him. Dr. Sluter joins us, bristling with efficiency.
"Mr. Steele, welcome back,"
she says. "You haven't stopped smiling." I tuck a strand of Anna's hair behind her ear as she pulls up outside the Heathman in the R8.
"I'm very relieved and happy."
She flashes me a smile.
"Good."
We climb out, and Anna hands her keys to the valet. It's getting darker and cooler, and Anna shivers, so I drape my arm around her shoulders and we wander into the hotel. From the foyer, I eye the marble bar. "Shall we celebrate?"
"Celebrate?"
Anna frowns. "Your dad?" She chuckles.
"Oh, him.
I've missed that sound." I kiss her hair.
"Can we just eat in our room, you know, have a quiet night in?"
"Sure, come." Taking her hand, we walk to the elevators. Anna devours her dinner.
"That was delicious."
She pushes her plate away.
"They sure know how to make a fine tart tatin here."
"That they do, Anna. That's the most I've seen you eat the entire time we've been here."
"I was hungry."
She sits back, replete, and it's most gratifying to witness. She's fresh and clean from our bath earlier, and wearing nothing but my t-shirt and her panties. She's all eyes and smiles and ponytail and legs, especially legs. Lifting my glass of wine, I take a sip. "What would you like to do now?" I keep my tone gentle and hopefully a little seductive. My iPod is playing some serene tunes in the background. I know what I want to do, but she's had an emotional day.
"What do you want to do?"
"Is this a trick question?" I raise a brow, amused. "What I always want to do."
"And that is?"
"Mrs. Gray, don't be coy." She purses her lips with her secret smile and, reaching across the table, grasps my hand and turns it over. With great care, she skates her index finger over my palm, which tingles in response. It's an odd feeling that takes my breath away.
"I'd like you to touch me with this."
Her voice is low and provocative as her fingertip continues brushing over my index finger. Her touch echoes everywhere.
"Fuck."
I shift in my chair.
"Just that?" "Maybe this."
She traces a line along my middle finger and back to my palm.
"And this?"
She weaves a path up to my wedding ring.
"Definitely this."
She stops, her finger pressed against my platinum ring.
"This is very sexy."
"Is it now?"
"It sure is. It says, 'This man is mine.'"
Hell, I'm hard. Yes, Anna, yours. Using her fingernail, she outlines the small callus that's formed where my palm rubs against my ring, her eyes on mine. Her pupils dilate, the dark overcoming the bright blue. She beguiles me. Leaning forward, I capture her chin in my hand. Mrs. Gray, are you seducing me?
I hope so.
Anastasia, I'm a given. Always. Come here. I pull her into my lap and hold her. I like having unfettered access to you. To prove it, I run my hand up her naked thigh to her behind, then clasping the nape of her neck with my other hand, I angle her head and kiss her, thoroughly, exploring her mouth and savoring the feel of her tongue against mine as her fingers find my hair. She tastes of apple pie and Anna, with a hint of fine Chablis. It's a stimulating combination in every sense. We're both breathing hard when I pull away. Let's go to bed, I whisper against her lips.
Bed?
She scoffs.
Oh.
I lean back and tug her hair so I'm looking directly into her eyes. Where would you prefer, Mrs. Gray? She shrugs, nonchalant, challenging.
Surprise me.
You're feisty this evening. I run my nose down hers while a list of possibilities forms in my mind.
Maybe I need to be restrained.
Maybe you do. You're getting mighty bossy in your old age.
What are you going to do about it?
She squares her shoulders in that way she does, ready for battle. Oh, Anna. I know what I'd like to do about it. Depends if you're up to it.
Oh, Mr. Gray, you've been very gentle with me these last couple of days. I'm not made of glass, you know.
You don't like gentle?
With you, of course. But you know, variety is the spice of life.
She flutters her eyelashes. You're after something less gentle?
Something life-affirming.
Wow. Life-affirming. Astonished, I gaze at her, as all manner of sexual scenarios pop most welcome into my mind. She nods, gazing into my eyes and teasing her lower lip with her teeth. On purpose. She's goading me. She wants life-affirming, I can oblige. Don't bite your lip. I tighten my grip on her and rise, holding her close. She gasps in surprise and grabs my arms while I carry her across the room and settle her on the farthest sofa. I have a plan. I want to see how far her newfound sexual confidence extends, and I want to watch. Wait here, don't move. She turns her head, her eyes tracking me as I head to the bedroom. I scan the room and remember one of the presents she opened this morning at breakfast, some fancy toiletries from Kate. In the smart presentation box, I discover a small bottle of scented moisturizing oil, dark amber, and sandalwood. Perfect. I slip it into the rear pocket of my jeans. From the bathroom, I retrieve both belts from our hotel bathrobes and grab one of the largest bath towels. Back in the living room, I'm pleased to find Anna has stayed on the couch. Obedience. At last. She can't see me as I approach her from behind, or hear me as I'm barefoot. She gasps when I lean over and grab the hem of her t-shirt. I think we'll dispense with this. I drag it over her head and toss it on the floor, admiring how her nipples peak in response to the brush of the material and the cooler temperature in the room. I grab her ponytail, tipping her head back and claiming her mouth with a brief kiss. Stand up. I murmur against her skin. She obliges, naked except for her panties. I lay the towel over the sofa, not wishing to get oil or anything else on the fabric. Take your panties off. I look directly at Anna. She swallows, but with her eyes fixed on mine, she obeys without hesitating. I like this version of Anna. Sit. She does as she's told. And I grasp her ponytail once more, twirling her soft hair between my fingers. I tug it, pulling back her head, and stand over her. You'll tell me to stop if this gets too much, yes? She nods. Damn it, Anna. Say it.
Yes,
she answers, her voice a little shrill and breathy, betraying her excitement. I smirk and pitch my voice low.
Good.
So, Mrs. Gray, by popular demand, I'm going to restrain you. I've chosen this, the only sofa that has finials, for a reason. Bring your knees up and sit right back. Once more, she complies without hesitation. Taking her left leg, I wrap a belt from one of the robes around her lower thigh and tie a slip knot above her knee.
Bathrobes?
Anna asks. I'm improvising. I tie the other end to the finial at the back left-hand corner of the sofa and tug, parting her thighs. Don't move. I do the same with her right leg, tying the other belt to the back right finial. Anna is splayed out, her legs spread wide, revealing all she has to offer, her hands by her sides. Okay, I ask, drinking in the view from above. She nods and looks up at me, soft, sweet, vulnerable.
Mine.
Bending down, I kiss her.
You have no idea how hot you look right now.
I rub my nose against hers, fighting my anticipation of what's to come. Change of music, I think. I wander over to my iPod. I scroll through artists, select a track, press repeat, and play. Sweet About Me. Perfect. As Gabriella Chilmi's sugared, sultry voice fills the room, I turn and lock eyes with my trussed-up, naked wife and saunter back to her. Her gaze doesn't leave mine, as I sink down onto my knees in front of her to worship at her altar. Her mouth parts as she inhales.
Oh, Anna, let's see how far your confidence has grown. I know what she's feeling. Exposed, vulnerable, I ask.
She licks her lips and nods.
Good, I whisper. Baby, you've got this.
Hold out your hands. From my back pocket, I withdraw the small bottle of oil. Anna holds up her cupped palms, and I pour a little oil into her hands. The scent is heavy, but not unpleasant.
Rub your hands.
She wriggles on the couch.
Oh, this will never do.
Keep still, I warn. Anna stops squirming.
Now, Anastasia, I want you to touch yourself.
She blinks, surprised, I think. Start at your throat and work down. Her teeth dig into that bottom lip.
Don't be shy, Anna. Come, do it.
Come on, Anna. She places her hands on either side of her neck, then glides them down to the tops of her breasts, leaving a slick shine over her skin in their wake.
Lower,
I whisper. After a beat, her hands embrace her breasts.
Tease yourself.
Tentatively, her darkening eyes on mine, she takes each of her nipples between thumb and forefinger and gently tugs on both.
Harder,
I urge her, feeling like the serpent in the garden.
Like I would,
I add, gripping my own thighs to keep myself from touching her. She groans in response and squeezes and tugs harder. I watch each pucker and lengthen under her touch.
Damn, she's hot.
Yes, like that.
Again.
She closes her eyes and moans and rolls and twists them between her fingers and thumbs.
Open your eyes.
My voice is hoarse. She blinks them open.
Again,
I order.
I want to see you enjoy your touch.
She continues, her eyes clouded with dark longing, her breathing increasing as desire consumes her while my yearning matches hers.
This must be making her so wet.
My pants are getting tighter by the second. Enough. Hands lower. She squirms.
Keep still, Anna. Absorb the pleasure.
Lower.
You do it,
she whispers. Oh, I will. Soon. You lower now. She has no idea how fucking hot she looks right now. She glides her hands beneath her breasts, over her stomach, toward her belly as she writhes, pulling on the robe restraints. No. No. I shake my head. Still. Placing my hands on each of her knees, I hold her in place. Come on, Anna, lower. Her hands slide down to her belly. Lower. I mouth.
Christian, please.
She begs. I skim my hands from her knees, along her thighs, toward the exposed junction at the top of her legs. My end goal. Her goal. Come on, Anna, touch yourself. Her left hand grazes her vulva, then she starts to rub her fingers in a slow circle over her clitoris.
Ah!
She breathes, her mouth forming a badly drawn O. Again. The word is a whisper and a command. She groans, gasping for air, and closes her eyes, tipping her head back against the sofa as her hand moves. Again. She groans again. And I don't want her to come without me. Grabbing her hands, I hold them firmly and bend down between her thighs, running my nose and tongue over her clitoris, back and forth again, taking her higher. She's so wet, dripping with her lust.
Ah!
She cries and tries to move her hands. I tighten my fingers around her wrists while I continue my sensual onslaught. I'll restrain these two. Keep still. I breathe, against her most intimate place. Anna groans, and I release her, then slowly ease two fingers inside her. So wet, so ready, so greedy. The heel of my hand pushes up against her clitoris. I'm going to make you come quickly, Anna. Ready?
Yes,
she breathes, nodding frantically. I move my hand, hard, fast, stimulating her both inside and out. She mules above me, her head twisting to and fro, her toes curling, and her fingers clawing at the towel beneath her. I know she wants to straighten her legs to lessen the intense feeling, but she can't. She's close. So close. But I don't stop. And I feel it. The beginning of the end. Her orgasm coming.
Surrender,
I whisper, and she cries out, loud and proud, and I press the heel of my hand against her clitoris and ride out her orgasm, which goes on and on. Wow, Anna. With my other hand, I untie the robe belts, one at a time. As she descends back to earth, I murmur, my turn. Withdrawing my fingers from inside her, I ease back and I flip her over so she's face down on the sofa, her knees on the floor. I yank open my jeans, spread her legs with my knee, and slap her hard across her beautiful backside.
Ah!
She cries, and I drive into her as deep as I can. She cries out again.
Oh, Anna.
I breathe, and gripping her hips, I start to move. Hard. Fast. Again, taking my pleasure. She wanted it rough. We aim to please. I drive into her, losing myself in her, so in her. Her cries taking me higher. Fuck. She's building again. I feel it.
Come on, Anna.
I shout. And she comes once more, taking me over the edge with her. I ease her off the sofa and we lie down on the floor, where she sprawls on top of me, facing the ceiling. We're quiet, catching our collective breath. Life affirming enough for you? I ask eventually, as I kiss her hair.
Oh, yes.
Her hands settle on my thighs, and she tugs at the material of my jeans.
I think we should go again. No clothes for you this time.
Again? Christ, Anna, give a man a chance. She giggles, and I can't help laughing with her. I'm glad Ray's conscious. Seems all your appetites are back. She turns over, still on top of me, and scowls.
Are you forgetting about last night and this morning?
She pouts and rests her chin on her hands, on my chest. Nothing forgettable about either of those. I grin and grab her bountiful behind with both hands.
You have a fantastic ass, Mrs. Gray. So do you.
She arches a brow,
though yours is still undercover.
And what are you going to do about that, Mrs. Gray?
Why, I'm going to undress you, Mr. Gray. All of you.
Her enthusiasm is infectious.
And I think there's a lot that's sweet about you,
she whispers, repeating the song lyric, her eyes radiating her warmth and love. Shit.
You are.
She stresses and kisses the corner of my mouth. Closing my eyes, I tighten my arms around her. Why are you talking about this?
Christian, you are. You made this weekend so special, in spite of what happened to Ray. Thank you.
Large, luminous eyes meet mine. Because I love you, I murmur.
I know, she says. I love you too.
She runs her fingertips down my cheek.
And you're precious to me too. You do know that, don't you?
Precious? Me? Suddenly I'm helpless and panicked and completely disarmed. What do I say?
Not now, maggot.
Fuck. I close my eyes. I don't want that in my head.
Believe me,
she whispers. And I open them once more, gray eyes to blue. It's not easy. My words are almost inaudible. I don't want to talk about this. It's too raw, right now. For some reason I don't understand. She holds such power over me. That's why.
Try. Try hard. Because it's true.
She caresses my face, and I know she means what she says. If only I could hear it without panicking inside. You'll get cold. Come. I move her to one side and stand, pulling her to her feet, too. Leaving the detritus of our lovemaking, Anna slips her arm around me. I switch off the iPod, and we stroll back into the bedroom, while I wonder about my reaction. Why is it still so hard to hear her declarations of love sometimes? I shake my head.
Shall we watch TV?
Anna asks, and I know she's trying to recapture our former levity. I was hoping for round two. She eyes me speculatively.
Well, in that case, I think I'll be in charge.
Oh. She pushes me suddenly with such force that I fall onto the bed. Before I know it, she's straddled me and is pinning my arms down on either side of my head. Well, Mrs. Gray, now that you've got me, what are you going to do with me? Leaning down, her breath tickling my ear, she whispers,
I am going to fuck you with my mouth.
Oh, boy. I close my eyes as she runs her teeth along my jaw, and I surrender to her. I surrender to the love of my life. Monday, September 12th, 2011. Anna is still asleep when I step out of the ensuite. Frankly, I'm not surprised. She was persistent last night. Sex mad and insatiable indeed. I'm not complaining. That delectable memory fresh in my mind, I gather my clothes together and step into the living room to get dressed. The remnants from last night's tryst are still all over the sofa. I untie the bathrobe belts and grab the towel, wondering what housekeeping would have made of this scenario if they'd come in early to clean. Folding the items, I place them on the console beside the bedroom door. I order breakfast. It will take half an hour, and I'm hungry. To distract myself, I sit down at the desk and open my laptop. Today, I want to arrange moving Ray to Northwest Hospital, where my mother can watch over him. I fire up my emails, and to my surprise, there's one from Detective Clark. He has questions for Anna about that asshole Hyde. What the hell? I send a brief reply to let him know we're in Portland, and he'll have to wait until we return to Seattle. I call my mom and leave a message about moving Ray, then breeze through my other emails. There's one from Roz. The Huangs are inviting us to visit later this week. That will depend on Ray, I guess. I email Roz to say that it's likely that I'll be able to go, but I can't confirm yet, as we're not sure what's happening with my father-in-law. I don't want to leave Anna to deal with this on her own. As I press send, I receive a reply from Clark. He's coming to Portland. Shit. What can be that important?
Good morning.
Anna's sweet tone interrupts my thoughts. When I turn around, she's standing in the bedroom doorway, wearing nothing but a sheet and a shy smile. Her hair is a tousled mess that falls to her breasts, her bright eyes intent on me. She looks like a Greek goddess. Mrs. Gray, you're up early. I hold out my arms, and in spite of the sheet, she bolts across the room, offering me a welcome flash of legs, and lands in my lap.
As are you,
she says. I cradle her against me and kiss her hair. I was just working. What? She asks, leaning back to scrutinize me. She knows something is off. I blow out a breath. I got an email from Detective Clark. He wants to talk to you about that fucker, Hyde.
Really?
Yes. I told him you're in Portland for the time being, so he'll have to wait, but he says he'd like to interview you here.
He's coming here?
Apparently so. She frowns.
What's so important that it can't wait?
Exactly.
When's he coming?
Today. I'll email him back.
I have nothing to hide. I wonder what he wants to know.
We'll find out when he gets here. I'm intrigued, too. I move in my chair. Breakfast will be here shortly. Let's eat, then we can go see your dad.
You can stay here if you want. I can see you're busy.
No, I want to come with you.
Okay.
She grins, pleased, I think, that I want to accompany her. She kisses me, then waltzes back toward the bedroom and, with a suggestive glance at me, lets the sheet drop as she crosses the doorway. Damn. Goddess indeed. That's my cue. Emails and breakfast can wait. I follow her into the bedroom to make good on her invitation. Ray is awake, but it would appear that he's not in the best of tempers. After saying good morning, I leave Anna to deal with him and head to the waiting room, my new office, or so it seems. I've already received tentative approval from Dr. Sluder to move Ray to Seattle, and I'm waiting for my mother to confirm that there's a bed for him at Northwest before I organize the helicopter transfer. Dr. Sluder thinks we can relocate him as early as tomorrow, but she'll confirm that later today, once she's run more tests. I call Andrea.
Good morning, Mr. Gray.
Andrea, hello. I'm hoping we can move Raymond Steele tomorrow. Can you find an air ambulance service, please, Portland OHSU to Northwest Hospital? My mother should know a reliable company. I'll ask Ray's doctor if there's any specific medical equipment that should be on board. Either she or I will send that through.
I'll call Dr. Gray.
Do. I'm waiting to hear from her if there's a room available.
Okay, I'll take care of it.
Taiwan, Roz and I may fly out on Thursday evening. We'll need the jet.
You're at WSU on Thursday morning.
I know, but get Stefan and the crew prepped. It's still tentative.
Yes, sir. Actually, Roz wants a word.
Okay, thanks. Put me through. Roz and I have a quick catch-up and decide that signatures on the heads of agreement for the Taiwan shipyard can wait until tomorrow, when I'm hopefully back in Seattle. As soon as I hang up, my phone buzzes. It's Clark.
Mr. Gray, thank you for seeing me today. Is 4 o'clock a good time?
Sure. We're at the Heathman.
I'll see you then.
Anna wanders into the waiting room. She looks serious. Is there a problem? Okay. I respond to Clark and hang up. Clark will be here at 4 this afternoon. She frowns.
Okay. Ray wants coffee and donuts.
I laugh, not expecting that response. I think I would too if I'd been in an accident. Ask Taylor to go.
No, I'll go.
Take Taylor with you. Anna rolls her eyes.
Okay.
She sounds like an exasperated teen. I smirk and cock my head to one side. There's no one here. Her eyes widen a fraction as she catches my drift. Her interest is clearly piqued. She sets her shoulders as if she's going to challenge me and raises that stubborn steel chin. A young couple enters the room behind her, and the man has his arms around his weeping companion. The woman is visibly distraught. Shit, something is seriously wrong. Anna's eyes widen with compassion. Then she turns to me and lifts a shoulder in regret. Oh, maybe she was game for a spanking. The thought is appealing. Very appealing. Picking up my laptop, I take her hand, and we head out of the room. They need the privacy more than we do, I mutter. We'll have our fun later. Taylor is outside, waiting in the car. Let's all go get coffee and donuts, I say. We could use a treat. Anna returns my smile.
Voodoo Donut in Portland. Best donuts in the world,
she says, and climbs into the back of the SUV. Detective Clark is punctual. Taylor shows him into our suite, and he wanders in, looking as rumpled and curmudgeonly as ever.
Mr. Gray, Mrs. Gray, thank you for seeing me.
Detective Clark. I shake his hand and direct him to sit down, then step over to join Anna on the sofa that I tied her to last night.
It's Mrs. Gray I wish to see,
Clark says, his tone a little abrasive, and I know he's addressing Taylor and me. Oh, now I definitely want to hear what he has to say. I nod to Taylor, who acknowledges my cue and leaves, closing the door behind him. Anything you wish to say to my wife, you can say in front of me. If this is about Hyde, I'm not leaving my wife's side.
Are you sure you'd like your husband to be present?
Clark asks Anna. She looks puzzled.
Of course, I have nothing to hide. You are just interviewing me?
Yes, ma'am.
I'd like my husband to stay.
There, told you so. I glare at him, pleased that Anna has taken my side. I sit down beside her, trying to mask my simmering irritation.
All right,
murmurs Clark. He coughs to clear his throat, and I wonder if he's nervous.
Mrs. Gray, Mr. Hyde maintains that you sexually harassed him and made several lewd advances toward him.
What the fuck? Anna looks both shocked and amused at once. She places her hand on my thigh, but it doesn't stop me.
That's preposterous,
I exclaim. Her fingernails dig into my leg, I suspect in an attempt to shut me up.
That's not true.
Anna looks him squarely in the eye, the embodiment of serenity as she addresses Clark.
In fact, it was the other way around. He propositioned me in a very aggressive manner, and he was fired.
Clark's mouth flattens, as if he'd been expecting this response.
Hyde alleges that you fabricated a tale about sexual harassment in order to get him fired. He says that you did this because he refused your advances and because you wanted his job.
Anna's face twists in disgust.
That's not true.
This is fucking absurd. Detective, please don't tell me you have driven all this way to harass my wife with these ridiculous accusations. Clark graces me with a resigned look.
I need to hear this from Mrs. Gray, sir.
Anna grasps my thigh again, and I know she wants me to shut up. You don't have to listen to this shit, Anna.
I think I should let Detective Clark know what happened.
She pins me with bright blue eyes, imploring me to shut the fuck up. Okay, baby, have it your way. Waving at her to continue, I endeavor to stay quiet and keep my temper in check. She folds her hands in her lap and continues.
What Hyde says is simply not true.
Her voice rings calm and clear through the room.
Mr. Hyde accosted me in the office kitchen one evening. He told me that it was thanks to him that I'd been hired and that he expected sexual favors in return. He tried to blackmail me using emails that I'd sent to Christian, who wasn't my husband then. I didn't know Hyde had been monitoring my emails. He's delusional. He even accused me of being a spy sent by Christian, presumably to help him take over the company. He didn't know that Christian had already bought SIP.
She shakes her head and knits her hands together.
In the end, I took him down.
Took him down? Clark interjects, puzzled.
My father is ex-army. Hyde, touched me, and I know how to defend myself.
Her eyes flick to mine, and I can't hide my pride and awe for my girl.
Don't mess with my girl. She's a warrior.
I see.
Clark huffs out of breath and sits back on the sofa. Have you spoken to any of Hyde's former personal assistants? I ask. I'm curious to know if the cops have made more progress than Welch.
Yes, we have. But the truth is, we can't get any of his assistants to talk to us. They all say he was an exemplary boss, even though none of them lasted more than 3 months.
Damn. We've had that problem, too. My security chief, he's interviewed Hyde's past 5 PAs. This news piques Clark's interest. He frowns, his eyes boring into me.
And why is that?
Because my wife worked for him, and I run security checks on anyone my wife works with. Clark's face reddens.
I see.
His bushy brows draw together.
I think there's more to this than meets the eye, Mr. Gray. We are conducting a more thorough search of his apartment tomorrow, so maybe something will present itself then. Though by all accounts, he hasn't lived there for some time.
You've searched already?
Yes, we're doing it again. A fingertip search this time.
You've still not charged him with the attempted murder of Roz Bailey and myself? Maybe that's the FBI's prerogative?
We're hoping to find more evidence in regard to the sabotage of your aircraft, Mr. Gray. We need more than a partial print, and while he's in custody, we can build a case.
Is this all you came down here for? Clark stiffens.
Yes, Mr. Gray, it is, unless you've had any further thoughts about the note.
Again, Anna's eyes scrutinize mine, but this time she's frowning.
No, I told you, it means nothing to me.
My wife does not need to know about that. And I don't see why we couldn't have done this over the phone.
I think I told you I prefer a hands-on approach, and, he adds slightly sheepishly, I'm visiting my great-aunt, who lives in Portland. Two birds, one stone.
Well, if we're all done, I have work to attend to. I stand, hoping that Clark will take the hint. He does.
Thank you for your time, Mrs. Gray.
Anna nods.
Mr. Gray?
I open the door and he shuffles out. Thank fuck. Anna leans back into the sofa.
Can you believe that asshole?
I run my hands through my hair.
Clark?
Anna says.
No, that fucker Hyde. No, I can't.
She looks bemused.
What's his fucking game? I don't know. Do you think Clark believed me?
Of course he did. He knows Hyde is a fucked up asshole.
You're very sweary.
Anna chastises me.
Sweary? Is that even a word?
It is now.
And just like that, her humor smothers my anger and it's gone. Marveling at the spell she casts, I sit down beside her and pull her into my arms.
Don't think about that fucker. Let's go see your dad and try to talk about the move tomorrow. He was adamant that he wanted to stay in Portland and not be a bother.
Anna says, I'll talk to him. She fingers the buttons on my shirt.
I want to travel with him.
That should be possible. Okay, I'll come too. Sawyer and Taylor can take the cars. I'll let Sawyer drive your R8 tonight. She offers me a sweet smile of thanks, and I feel 10 feet tall. Ray has capitulated. He's in far better spirits than he was this morning. The donuts must have worked their magic, and I think he's secretly pleased that he'll get to ride in a helicopter tomorrow. He doesn't remember anything of his flight here from Astoria. I make a mental note to take him up in Charlie Tango at some point. While Anna sits with him, I head to the waiting room to finalize Ray's move. Andrea has everything organized. She is, without doubt, the best PA I've ever had. Thanks, Andrea.
You're welcome, Mr. Gray. Anything else?
No, it's all good. Go home.
Will do, sir.
I fire off a quick email to Samir to review Andrea's salary and recommend a generous raise. Before I head back to the ward, I reflect on Clark's visit and what he did and didn't say. He's obviously liaising with the FBI with regard to Charlie Tango's sabotage, but mentioned that he's searching Hyde's apartment again. Why? Does he have another lead, or is it something else that he's not telling us? And where was Hyde while he was planning his kidnap attempt? It's obvious he was still in Seattle. I have the CCTV footage to prove it. This is worth exploring. I email Welch and Barney and ask them if they tracked the movements of the white van that Hyde used before he arrived at Escala. Perhaps they'll come up with something. Tuesday, September 13th, 2011. I hang up from my phone conversation with my mother and catch Anna's monochrome eye. She's gazing down at me from my office wall with her disarming smile, her eyes bright and brimming with intelligence. It's been only 3 hours since I saw her, but I miss her already. I wonder what she's doing right now. She's probably at work, and if all has gone to plan, Ray should be settled in his room at Northwest Hospital, where my mother will keep an eye on him. I hope he's comfortable, or as comfortable as he can be. He seemed to enjoy the flight from OHSU to Boeing Field, but he's not a man who likes to be the center of attention, quite the opposite, in fact. A little like his daughter. And here I am, missing her. Last time I saw her, she was heading to the hospital in an ambulance with her father. I glance at my watch. She'll definitely be at work. I type a quick email. From Christian Gray to Anastasia Gray, September 13th, 2011, 1358. Missing you. Mrs. Gray, I've been back in the office for only 3 hours, and I'm missing you already. Hope Ray has settled into his new room okay. Mom is going to see him this afternoon and check up on him. I'll collect you around 6 this evening, and we can go see him before heading home. Sound good? Your loving husband, Christian Gray, CEO. I press send, then open the report on my desk and start to read, but almost immediately the ping of a new email distracts me. Anna? No, it's from Barney. From Barney Sullivan to Christian Gray, September 13th, 2011, 1409, Jack Hyde. CCTV around Seattle tracks the white van from South Irving Street. Before that, I can find no trace, so Hyde must have been based in that area. As Welch has told you, the unsub car was rented with a false license by an unknown female, though nothing that ties it to the South Irving Street area. Details of known GEH and SIP employees who live in the area are in the attached file, which I have forwarded to Welch, too. There was nothing on Hyde's SIP computer about his former PAs. As a reminder, here is a list of what was retrieved from Hyde's SIP computer. Gray's home address is 5 properties in Seattle, 2 properties in Detroit. Detailed resumes for Carrick Gray, Elliot Gray, Christian Gray, Dr. Grace Trevelyan, Anastasia Steele, Mia Gray. Newspaper and online articles relating to Dr. Grace Trevelyan, Carrick Gray, Christian Gray, Elliot Gray. Photographs, Carrick Gray, Dr. Grace Trevelyan, Christian Gray, Elliot Gray, Mia Gray. I'll continue my investigation, see what else I can find. B. Sullivan, head of IT, GEH. I gaze at the contents of his email and wonder when Hyde started scouring the internet for information on my family. Was it before Anna started working with him, or was it after he'd met me? I'm about to pen a response to Barney when Anna's reply to my earlier email pops into my inbox. All she says is sure, with a kiss. Oh. Feeling a tad deflated, I glance at the enigmatic, smiling goddess on the wall. I thought we might indulge in some email banter. She's normally so good at that. This is not like her. I respond to her email with, "Are you okay?" While I wait for her reply, I sift through the address file that Barney has attached to his email. A couple of GEH employee names and one from SIP jump out at me. The highest profile name is Elizabeth Morgan, the HR director at SIP. Her name stirs something in the back of my brain, but whatever it is, it remains elusive. I'll ask Welch to follow up on her when we next speak, but it's hard to conceive that any of these people could be involved with Hyde. I dismiss that train of thought and wonder what's up with Anna. I'm tempted to pick up the phone and call her, but as I reach for it, another email arrives from her. She writes,
"Fine, just busy. See you at 6. Kiss."
Of course she's busy. She's missed a few days of work, and my girl is nothing but conscientious. Gray, keep it together. I go back to Barney's email and read through his list one more time. It doesn't yield any further insights, but maybe he can answer a question for me. From Christian Gray to Barney Sullivan, September 13th, 2011, 1423. Jack Hyde. Barney, thanks for the email. Can you track when Hyde began these internet searches? Christian Gray, CEO. I check the time. I have a catch-up with Roz. Taylor and I wait for Anna outside SIP. I glance anxiously toward the entrance, hoping that she'll be out at any moment. An email alert appears on my phone. From Barney Sullivan to Christian Gray, September 13th, 2011, 1735. Jack Hyde. Internet searches on the topics in Hyde's email happened between 1932, Monday, June 13th, 2011, and 1714, Wednesday, June 15th, 2011. B. Sullivan, head of IT. Interesting. I remember I'd met him the Friday before, at the bar when I'd arranged to meet Anna. He was a loudmouthed asshole then. I wonder if he was looking for anything specific on my family, and if he found it. I glance out of the window, and finally Anna appears. She dashes toward the car, dodging the rain, Sawyer at her heels. I smile as I watch her, but my heart sinks when she glances into the car. Her face is a stark alabaster in the gray rain. Shit. Sawyer opens her door, and she slides in beside me.
Hi.
The inflection in my voice is tentative. What is it, Anna?
Hi.
Her eyes flick to my face, briefly, too briefly, and all I see is her turmoil flashing back at me.
What's wrong?
She shakes her head as Taylor pulls into traffic.
Nothing.
I don't think that's true. Is work all right?
Yes, fine, thanks.
Her tone is clipped. Tell me. Anna, what's wrong? My words are harsher than I intend, as they're loaded with my anxiety.
I've just missed you, that's all. And I've been worried about Ray.
Oh, of course. Thank God. I brighten immediately. Ray's good. I try to reassure her. I spoke to Mom this afternoon, and she's impressed with his progress. I reach for her hand. It's freezing.
Boy, your hand is cold. Have you eaten today?
She flushes. Anna, why does she do this?
I'll eat this evening. I haven't really had time.
I rub her hand in an attempt to warm it. Do you want me to add feed my wife to the security details list of duties? I catch Taylor's eye in the rearview mirror.
I'm sorry, I'll eat. It's just been a weird day. You know, moving Dad and all.
I guess. She turns away and stares out the window, leaving me to flounder. Something's not right. It has been a weird day. Take her at her word, Gray. I give her my news to test the water. I may have to go to Taiwan.
Oh, when?
This gets her attention. Later this week, maybe next week.
Okay.
I want you to come with me. Her lips thin.
Christian, please, I have my job. Let's not rehash this argument again.
I blow out a breath, unable to conceal my disappointment. Thought I'd ask.
How long will you go for?
Anna's voice is soft but distracted. This is not my girl. She's too quiet and hesitant. Not more than a couple of days. I wish you'd tell me what's bothering you.
Well, now that my beloved husband is going away...
Her voice fades as I raise her hand to my lips and kiss her knuckles. I won't be away for long.
Good.
She gives me a thin smile, but I know she's preoccupied. I gaze out the window and go through several scenarios that might be bothering Anna. Only one rings true. Her father has just been in a major accident, and his recovery will take some time. Yes, that's it. Gray, get a grip.
Raymond Steele is happy to see us. Can't thank you enough for organizing all this.
He waves at the airy room, his dark eyes full of quiet sincerity. Ray, you're most welcome. Uncomfortable with his gratitude, I change the subject.
I see you have a stack of sports magazines. From Annie. I've been reading about the Mariners and the season they've been having.
Ray launches into a diatribe about how disappointed he is with the M's this year. I have to say, I'm with him. It's not been a stellar season. Our conversation moves on to fishing. He's sorry to miss out on his angling trip in Astoria, and I mention my recent fishing expedition in Aspen.
Roaring Fork, I know it,
he says. You should come and stay, maybe for a weekend once you're up and about.
I'd appreciate that, Christian.
Throughout our discussion, Anna is quiet. Too quiet. She's tuning out and going elsewhere. It's frustrating.
Anna, what's wrong?
Ray yawns. Anna glances at me, and I know it's time to go.
Daddy will leave you to sleep.
Thanks, Anna, honey. I like that you dropped by. Saw your mom today, too, Christian. She was very reassuring, and she's a Mariners fan.
She's not crazy about fishing, though.
Don't know many women who are, eh?
Ray's smile is weary. He needs to rest.
I'll see you tomorrow, okay?
Anna kisses his forehead, and there's a trace of sadness in her voice.
Hell, why is she sad?
Come. I hold out my hand. Is she tired? Maybe what she needs is an early night. Anna was quiet in the car and quiet when we got home, and now she's just chasing her food around her plate with her fork, taciturn and distracted. My anxiety has climbed to DEFCON 1.
Damn it, Anna, will you tell me what's wrong?
I push my empty plate away. Please, you're driving me crazy. She turns apprehensive eyes to mine.
I'm pregnant.
What? I stare at her as a frisson of disbelief skitters down my spine, and for some unknown reason, I'm suddenly at the door of the skydiving plane hanging over the world without a parachute, about to leap out. Into the air. Into nothing. What? I don't recognize my voice.
I'm pregnant.
That's what I thought you said, but I thought we took care of this.
How?
She tilts her head to one side and raises a brow.
Fuck.
Anger like I've never felt before erupts inside me.
You're shot?
I snarl.
Did you forget you're shot?
She just stares at me, eyes glassy, as if she's looking right through me, and says nothing.
I don't want kids. Not yet. Not now.
Panic knots in my chest and tightens around my throat, feeding my fury.
Christ, Anna!
I bang my fist on the table and stand.
You have one thing to remember. Shit, I don't fucking believe it. How could you be so stupid?
She closes her eyes, then stares down at her fingers.
I'm sorry,
she whispers.
Sorry? Fuck!
A child. What do I do with a child?
I know the timing's not very good.
Not very good!
My bellow echoes around the room.
We've known each other 5 fucking minutes. I wanted to show you the fucking world, and now... Fuck! Diapers and vomit and shit!
I close my eyes. You won't love me anymore.
Did you forget? Tell me. Or did you do this on purpose?
No.
Her word is a quiet rush of denial. I thought we'd agreed on this.
And I don't give a fuck who can hear me. She cringes, folding in on herself.
I know we had. I'm sorry. This is why. This is why I like control, so shit like this doesn't come along and fuck everything up. Christian, please don't shout at me.
Fuck. I'll be displaced. She starts to cry. Don't you dare, Anna.
Don't start with waterworks now. Fuck.
I run a hand through my hair, trying to comprehend this colossal fuck-up.
You think I'm ready to be a father?
My voice cracks on the last word. She turns tear-filled eyes to me.
I know neither one of us is ready for this,
she mumbles.
But I think you'll make a wonderful father. We'll figure it out.
How the fuck do you know? My voice clamors around the room.
Tell me how!
She opens her mouth and closes it again as tears stream down her face. And there it is, her regret. Regret that's writ large in every feature of her face. Regret that she's saddled with me.